There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile, hour number two. Glad to have you here on this Monday. Jeff Poore joins us in just a little bit. Lots to talk about with him, and we'll set that up in just a second. I do want to give you a heads up. I got this note from Sally, my friends over at Bellingrath Gardens. They're offering free admission to federal employees affected by the shutdown. The gardens only passes available to federal employees with government-issued ID and up to three family members. That's cool. Adults or children from 5 to 12, free admission offered throughout the end of January. No admission charge for ages 4 and younger. Guests who wish to use free passes are asked to request them at the Bellingrath gift shop. That's Grath with a T. Did y'all see that note? I wish I'd taken it. Actually, I think I have that picture. It's so old that I think I actually had it printed. There used to be a sign on the way to the island, to Dolphin Island, where they had the turn there to go to Bellingrath, but somebody had printed it with a PH. It's not like a graph. No, it's Grath. So they are, but yeah, cool. Well done, Bellingrath. So your government-issued ID, free admission to the gardens. I would, and this idea is just still, cement's not dry on this one, but I'm thinking about friends of the show, friends of the radio station that are in the processing business for venison, doing something with, we could, involved in a couple programs, one, Hunters Helping the Hungry, that we've done over time with donating meat, and you donate the meat from deer you kill here in Alabama, and then through other fundraising mechanisms, we have a system to help pay for the processing costs, and we get that food to food banks and needy families. This would be, I mean, meat cost, when you're starting to look at your grocery bill, are a big, big deal, and I know there's probably a lot of hunters, women and men in Alabama that would love to do that and help out. Let's work on that. I'm thinking on that, how we do that if this shutdown continues, how we can donate and give back that way as well. All right. I want to play this clip before Jeff gets on, because I think this helps set up a bigger story here. And I put the story up from Reason.com on the Twitter feed about the partial video of the confrontation between kids from this Kentucky school and the Native American protester, marcher there. And like anything, when a story first comes out, I always say, let's just wait a second and see if we can get some backstory here. And now a lot of people are, in reverse mode. They all commented. They all knew exactly what was going on over the weekend. They were sure of themselves, and I sat and just waited. And now the context comes out. I actually watched the hour and something video that set up the context of what you see in the clip of the Covington High School kid and the Native American protester standing right next to each other. But preceding that, I think is more important, what led up to this whole situation. You had the students from the school there, and you had, and I guess they were, and we'll find out from Jeff, they were waiting around to get a ride on a bus or something to go back to Kentucky. And then you had a protest going on with D.C. area Black Hebrews, this group Black Hebrews, a black nationalist cult movement. Listen to this, and this is going to be my new favorite catchphrase is lice season. Let's check it out. Let's roll this. This is some of the protests that was going on. So you had the kids standing there from the high school, and then the black Hebrew nationalists standing there hurling these insults at the kids.
You want to wave high? A bunch of incest babies. A bunch of babies made out of incest. Right, trailer park babies. This is what America makes, make America great looks like. This, when was it great? When was it great? I dare you to say it. Right? exactly since it started, since you had us in slavery.
Right.
That's the only time that it was great. Look where we at. Where? Look where we at. Look at my people. Look at my people. First Nation that's gonna die.
First Nation is shut down, huh?
And eventually, that's gonna stop.
Let me ask you something.
Well, go ahead. Go ahead.
If this the best nation, why y'all can't get rid of lice season? If y'all the best nation, get rid of that damn lice on your back. Get rid of lice. Get rid of lice season. Goddamn dog.
Get rid of lice season. I know it's a seasonal thing. Get rid of lice. Get rid of lice season. That sets up just one of the things that Jeff and I will talk about when he joins us next, right here on Midday Mobile.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Monday and MLK Day. And we'll do this. Coming up in just a little bit, get another update from staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams. But right now, as I mentioned, talk to our buddy Jeff Poor. Jeff, with the list is getting longer and longer. But Lanyap, Breitbart, Yellowhammer News, also the host of his show up at WVNN in Huntsville, which we'll get to one of your guests coming up very soon and give a little tease on that. Jeff, glad to have you on. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
All right. I want to get into a list of things. And I saw your tweet. And, you know, it resonates with me because sometimes I ask that same question about so many stories. Why is this a national story, not a local story? And now it's even turned out to be even less of a story than that. And that was your comment, I think it was yesterday, over this Covington Catholic story and Native American protesters there in D.C. during the March for Life rally. I kind of lay out the scenario and then tell us what was at question here.
So the March for Life rally was the day before on Thursday, and then on Friday, there were a lot of different marches going on. I think this was there was the women's march, obviously, but this incident was the Indigenous People's March.
Okay.
And it was on the National Mall, and these school children were I believe going to get a bus back to Kentucky. So they're waiting there at the mall. There's, you know, this is like what they do. They bring the buses in. There's a lot of streets there, a lot of long streets around the National Mall where buses line up, and, you know, the kids get on the buses and then they head back to wherever, right?
So so these kids from Covington Catholic were there for the day before for the March for Life, right? And then they were, doing a school tour of D.C. or something like that. Now they're getting ready to head back to Kentucky. Okay.
Going to see the monuments, going to sightseeing stuff that you would do if you're in town, so why not?
So they're there, they're waiting for the bus, and what I've watched now, and I mean, there's no way to get the audio. I'll get a little cut or two to play, but I mean, I'm listening to this, and there was a protest, one of the protests going on there right in front of them from, let me get this right, the Black Hebrew Israelites, who were just hurling insults. I've got the audio. I mean, hurling insults at the kids, and one after another after another. And then, I mean, listen, there's fringe groups that'll hurl every kind of, if you go to D.C., Lord knows you live there, there's some group that hates people named, you know, Sean. It doesn't matter. I mean, there's, you know, there's a group for everything. But this group was hurling these insults at the kids.
Right. And, you know, here's the thing about this. These sort of things happen all the time up there. I've been around them. You know, the Code Pink marches, and you have a lot of different groups and a lot of different people that are interested in their politics. Now, a bunch of these kids had Make America Great Again hats. I think that kind of maybe drew attention to them. But you had these incidents all the time. Like, I remember when, even during Trump's inauguration, you remember all that turmoil and they're smashing windows and things like that. So I to me, when I said I can't believe this is national news, that sort of thing goes on in D.C. Whenever there's a protest or subgroup that's, you know, ideologically one way or another, and then you just, you have these interactions, and no one seems to think much of it. It's just part of the deal, and for some reason, it's just odd to me that this one is the one that's getting, you know, all the national media attention, but it looks to me like, you know, we were talking kind of about this, that maybe they pulled the trigger on making this their big hill to die on a little too soon.
Yeah, I mean, if you look, and this is why I caution people, no matter where you are politically, just to get, you know, a couple sources here or watch more video than just what gets clipped, because what happened before the Native American group, which it sounds like they walked in between the Black Hebrew Israelites and these kids from Covington Catholic, you need to see the backstory. You need to go, but that didn't run in any of the stories, and it ran nationally that here's this kid with Make America Great Again hat on, staring down a Native American with a drum, right? I mean, that was the only story, but it all comes in context.
Well, and it's really strange that they would single out high school kids, right?
Yep.
High school kids do stupid things, even if they were at fault. They do dumb things like this, and that this is like, we're going to make this a national media story. It's just strange, and there's a lot of, like, journalistic ethical questions there, like do no harm, and I don't know why that was the big story of the day when we didn't know much about it. Then we come to find out it was, a lot of this was out of context, but it was just really an odd thing that the national media, like NBC News and other outlets, really took to this story like it was the biggest deal of the day.
Yeah, you know what? No, that's a good point, because I mean, I've kind of been focused on looking at the context of the story. But let's do that. That's interesting. Let's take out the context, which y'all can check the links out, and I'll put them up on the Twitter feed and see it in context here. But let's take that context out. And even without the context, this is a high school kid and a Native American marcher and protester. How is that a national story? And how is that? Come on. I mean, we know what it is. How is it that it is somehow linked at the hip to President Trump? I mean, that was the point of it.
Yeah, well, and
I got the hat on, so therefore it must be doing the work of Donald Trump.
And you had a congressman yesterday, John Yarmuth of Kentucky, saying that he wanted to ban children or anybody under the age of 18 from wearing the Make America Great Again hat. I mean, just really, really outlandish things that they are suggesting coming out of this. And it's inspired all these weird reactions. You know, sometimes, even if the Democrats or the left has a good hand, they tend to overplay it. And they overplay some bad hands the last few days. And I'll say this about the Covington Catholic story and that BuzzFeed story. But those are, like, it's just really strange. Like, what was the goal there? Why did this get the central focus? And it doesn't, other than we want to make Trump look bad and link him to this, then, you know, you can't really trust the media when it comes to that, because there's an agenda.
You mentioned it. I want to get into that. You mentioned the BuzzFeed story, and last week when this came out, I said, "Yeah, let's slow down." I'm actually not one that immediately discounts it. It can't be true. I said, but let's wait for some more information. Look at the players here. Look at the allegations. BuzzFeed comes out and says they've got this story that is the bombshell. Although I said it may end up getting added to the trash heap of all the other bombshells that were supposed to derail President Trump. How has this played out since last week in the dropping of the bombshell?
So, like, Friday morning, my colleague Bill Jackson, I went on his show, and he thought this was the end for Trump, that you better start warming up the Bible to swear in Mike Pence as President of the United States, because this BuzzFeed story, if true, that was always the preface, if true, was going to be the end of Trump. And my reaction to that was, it's a BuzzFeed story. Let's think about it for a moment. You got a big scoop like that, you've got something that's just really got the goods on the President of the United States. CNN doesn't bite on it. CBS doesn't bite on it. The New York Times, the Washington Post don't bite on it. You know, any of the other national news channels or outlets don't bite on it. It goes down the chain to BuzzFeed. That tells you right there that there's something awry there. The story is uncooperatable. There's things that, you know, that... I think BuzzFeed is one of the first outlets that will run with a lot of things, because they have such a lower bar. If you recall, they ran with the Russian dossier.
Well, that's what I was going to say. They are the dossier, right, that the other news agencies, like CNN, that got in trouble, they referenced the BuzzFeed story. But BuzzFeed was the entity that ran the hotel and the prostitutes and all that stuff.
Right. So the way it works sometimes is these other outlets, it's maybe a little too much for them to run. It'll get shopped out to BuzzFeed. BuzzFeed seems like it will run anything. And then these other outlets get to talk about it like it's a serious news story. So it's kind of like, you know, we don't have to have our fingerprints on it, but we can talk about it. It's a strategy. It's not the first time they've done this. But I think that just tells you, when you see something at BuzzFeed that's a big bombshell like that, you need to really, really kind of wonder, like, what's going on here? Why isn't this in the New York Times? Why isn't this in the Washington Post? And that's the first red flag for me, and it turns out that was the case.
Well, okay, so let's talk about any kind of walkbacks here on this, or, because it's interesting, you know, you put a story out, and this is true in the day of the today in social media. It would have been true in old line print journalism, too. You print something, headline, Sullivan hates puppies, and then you find out that I actually do love puppies, and then you print the retraction, but the damage is already done. That's an old idea there.
I suppose the one thing I think it's a victory for Trump in this, that he's always called fake news and you can't trust the media. This just highlights that. This proves that point, that all these outlets that ran with it and ultimately got burned by BuzzFeed, you can't trust them either. So it just plays right into his hands, and it lives up to a stereotype. So while the damage may be done, I think a lot of people, all of this is really baked in. A lot of them aren't going to trust the media that are big-time supporters of Trump, and the ones that just don't like Trump are going to believe whatever is out there that's negative. So it's a strange game, but when the special counsel puts out a statement on a Friday afternoon debunking that, I can't think that's good for the health of the national news media right now.
Yeah, I mean, when you got Mueller coming in here and saying, you know, debunking this, that they're running with, you've got to ask. I mean, I know that somebody said it was, media malpractice, and there should be something done about it. And maybe there should, but at the same time, I think what you said is more important, that although it's a sad state, because there's lots of good reporters that are getting caught up in this, but eventually people are just going to discount everything that comes out. You know, everything that they're going to say, well, there's no arbitrary people. There's nobody who's doing it fairly, so it's all bunk.
Right, but this is stories that are too good to be true, almost a little too convenient, that Michael Cohen is, you know, whatever the bombshell is of the day. They're too good to be true. They point, you can draw the straight line directly to impeachment, right? So if it's that good, I just think, like, why would it show up in an alley like BuzzFeed? I mean, that was the big question, and no one really asked that question until Mueller put his statement out. Now, I can only imagine how that went down. I'm sure Donald Trump or Michael Cohen or any of the players in that said, hey, we played along with you guys. We cooperated with your investigation, and you're leaking this stuff to the media. This is how you're going to play the game. And that kind of forced the Mueller, you know, the Mueller team to respond to it. That's my guess.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of a compare and contrast, because I remember last week saying, okay, wait a second, at the beginning of the week, we had Jonathan Carl saying from his sources that this was going to be, I don't know, anticlimactic or something. I think that's right. What he said for the Mueller report. And then we hear this. I said, so somebody's got it wrong. I mean, somebody does have this wrong.
Yeah, I think so. And there's a lot of weird things going on with the story. Like one reporter with the byline on it says EC documentation. And the other one says that he had not seen the documentation. And then here's the thing about the documentation. Even like Watergate, right, when there were documents that Deep Throat produced and it showed the link, you know, the burglaries to the Nixon administration, it took months to put all the pieces together. It looks to me like this BuzzFeed story was just something that was kind of hatched out maybe in a couple of days, and not a lot of I-dotting and T-crossing.
Hey, can you hang on with me for a second? We're going to run to the break and come back.
Absolutely.
All right, coming back more with Jeff Poore, because I want to talk about the deal that is no deal, I guess. DACA for the wall funding. Also, find out why Jeff's on the road right now, other than the fact that he just likes to cover the 67 counties of Alabama with great regularity. But he is heading to Wetumpka today. And also, a big tease. We'll tell you what's coming up on his radio show tomorrow. It's all straight ahead right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. Continue our conversation with Jeff Poore with a laundry list of accolades here. I mean, Lanyap and Breitbart and Yellowhammer News radio show at WVNN, which, Jeff, you've got a guest coming up tomorrow that I saw took a polygraph as well. Who's coming on your show?
Former Alabama Supreme Court Chief Justice Roy Moore will be on the Jeff Poore show tomorrow, I believe at a 3 o'clock hour. So that ought to be good. We're going to talk about the polygraph, I hope. And I think probably one of the biggest questions on a lot of people's mind is, are we going to, what's his political future? Is he going to make another run, maybe a 2020 run? And I think that would get a lot of headlines. But just one thing I'll say real quick about Roy Moore, I think he's, there's a lot of things going on with the Roy Moore folks right now. So it wouldn't surprise me if we saw him make another run for something in Alabama.
Yeah, and you said the he's out on the judicial side, right, because of age, if I remember correctly.
Right.
So he's limited to what, the legislative branch, I guess.
And the executive. Well, I think he's looking at a U.S. Senate run, though. I honestly do.
Okay,
I don't think he'll. I don't know what his chances are. I don't think they're great. But we're gonna try to talk to him and see if we can gauge his interest in that.
I'm going to be listening to that and be interested in what he says. Also, I saw an email today from State Auditor Jim Ziegler. He's kicking off his exploratory campaign for running, as he said in the email, for Jones's U.S. Senate seat during a Tuesday speech. Now, just a little pet peeve of mine. I always am bothered that actually the U.S. Senate seat belongs to the people of Alabama. Doug Jones and Richard Shelby currently occupy those Senate seats, but they actually belong to us. But that's a whole nother rant. All right, speaking of which, Doug Jones, you and I were talking during the news break there. Doug Jones, over the weekend, was addressing the shutdown and even maybe a chance of doing some kind of, what, horse trading here on the border wall?
Yeah, he did a town hall up here in Huntsville on Saturday, and it's a real interesting approach. Like, he takes a little bit different tone than a lot of Democrats. He thinks that, you know, there's good faith negotiations to be made, that Donald Trump's announcement on Saturday was a show of good faith, and, you know, if they had to give a little on the wall or do more for border security, that they can work that with that. If he's willing to work on his end with the Dreamer question and then finding a DACA solution. He criticized all sides. It's kind of interesting. He did go after the House Democrats as well. But, I mean, he's obviously up in Huntsville because just it had such a big impact on the shutdown, had such a big impact on that area.
Well, okay, that is very different. And I wonder how many of those town halls around the country with Republicans and Democrats talk about that they would, you know, work a deal while, you know, the figureheads in this, as in President Trump and Chuck Schumer and Pelosi, are at least from where I sit, don't look like they're negotiating at all, that they're digging in their heels even more. I mean, this deal that was offered by the president, and then it's a big no from the Democrats.
Right, and it is kind of a rare thing to expect any kind of bipartisan agreement. There's no real incentive. Donald Trump's base does not want him to give in on the wall, and a lot of his base doesn't want him to give in on the Dreamers. Meanwhile, on the Democrat side, we're going into a 2020 primary presidential election cycle. There's no incentive for them to really think about giving in to Trump. I mean, they just don't want him to have a trophy, and they view the wall as a trophy. So I think that's kind of where we're at with it right now. And I don't know what it's going to take to get those two sides to come together. I think maybe some kind of national incident or something. But Doug Jones seems to think that Trump's at least acting in good faith, and he hopes that the Democrats on the House side counterparts will try to do as well.
Yeah, I saw a couple op-eds about that, that it's going to take some kind of national incident. I hope not. I mean, this, you know, I really hope not. But that's, it seems like that tells me that people don't think there's any deal.
There's one possibility. If Trump declares the emergency at the border and starts building the wall, and it goes to the courts and it gets locked up there, then maybe you take the wall question off the table, and then they can come to agreement on something besides the wall while the courts figure out, did Trump build the wall without congressional approval?
So, okay. So, I mean, do you think that that would be, that may be a solution there, that it gets hung up and says, well, so everybody kind of gets their win, right? That they took it to the wall, but now it's hung up in the courts, so let's get government back open. Not a bad thought process.
Yeah, so you get everybody paid. What idea is they open the government up for 3 weeks? I'm not sure that that's as feasible. I know the Senate's going to start looking at it tomorrow, and they're going to vote on Trump's proposal. But I do think the way out of this is for Trump to declare the emergency, try to start building the wall. The courts will probably stop it, but then he could say, hey, guys, I tried my best, and the runaway judicial branch or whatever, however he wants to phrase it, took it away from me. But we're going to keep trying, and then eventually maybe we'll get the wall. And the Democrats say, look, we stopped Trump from getting the wall. All their guys are happy. Let's open the government up and get everybody paid.
Wow. So, I mean, so the judicial branch, the courts can end up being the vessel for success for both sides to at least be able to claim success.
I think so. I think that may be the only way out. It's not a very good way out, because you're going to expand the executive branch's power.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one point to be made. Next time we have a big shooting, What if you have a Democrat president in office, what's to stop that Democrat from declaring an emergency and declaring guns illegal or something along those lines? So it really opens up some really bad possibilities, I think. But in the short-term political situation of it, it may be the only way out.
Yeah, I mean, I caution people when they rah-rah-rah, whomever's in office, if it's their person and they're all excited about it, you know, with expansion of executive powers, I said, number one, it's not what the founders wanted. Number two, that sword will cut both ways. So it's. I'm glad you point that out.
Right. And then that's the big fear of that, I think.
All right. I want to get one big local story. The reason you're in the vehicle right now and not in the studio talking to us, you're on the road and you're heading to Wetumpka.
Yeah, so Governor Ivey's going to be touring some of the damage from the tornado day before yesterday, I believe, in Wetumpka. I think you've seen a lot of the photos, just total destruction, and got to hopefully get a better idea what's going on and sort of the response and what's next. You know, obviously you're gonna have some kind of federal assistance that's going to be applied for, and just see how that part in Elmore County is going to try to get back on track and recover from that weather event.
The one photo that really stood out to me was that church, that old church before and after. It was just gone. I mean, just
yeah,
I know it's cliche, but it was a pile of rubble.
Yeah.
I mean, it's cliche, but it's just the darn truth, man. It just got leveled.
Yeah. And there's a lot more of that. There's people without homes, and I know there's a lot of people without power and water and things like that. But if you've ever been to Wetumpka, it's on the Coosa River. There's a lot of historic structures there, and I'm really interested to see how a lot of those withstood the tornado.
Somebody who can be more Alabama than me is Jeff Poore. So that's a worthwhile discussion too, because I say, you know, I used to say Wetumpka, and then somebody corrected me and says Wetumpka. What is it?
I heard it both ways all my life. I'm sticking with what I hear on the news, Wetumpka. But
okay, I'll go with you. I'll go with you then. If it's if I have somebody else to hide behind, then I'll call it Wetumpka too.
I'll get you a definitive ruling on that a little later.
All right, and I can't wait to read a piece you have coming out about Demopolis.
So yeah, a couple of weeks ago I sat down with the mayor of Demopolis for about an hour, and the Black Belt's one of the more like economically beleaguered parts of the state. We know all the stories, and you can see the statistics. But you go to Demopolis, and things are a little different there. They got their hospitals not suffering. They made a partnership with the University of Alabama at Birmingham. They have the good schools, that unlike a lot of places. They don't have the struggles that Selma had. And, like, you go through their history, and it's sort of an intact town. But one of the big things they did, and they thought of this a long time ago, when desegregation was underway and they integrated the schools, Demopolis didn't fight it. Demopolis came up with a plan and took it to the Department of Justice in the late 60s, early 70s, and they worked things out, and the races got along there, whereas in Selma, you had just gridlock. So it's paying off now because Demopolis doesn't have a lot of the strife as a lot of these Black Belt cities, and my argument is if the Black Belt's going to make a comeback, and maybe someday it starts kind of in Demopolis, which is at the fork of the Tom Bigby River and the Black Warrior River. So it could be a river port again. There's a lot of industry there. The mayor's working to get a lot of jobs there, and he's trying to do some things with the state to really turn around and make it an economic engine of the Black Belt and get things back on track.
I'll be looking forward to that, and we'll talk more about that for sure on Wednesday when you join us on the morning show.
Absolutely. Happy to do so.
All right. Remind folks, too, if they want to get more information about your upcoming interview with Roy Moore or anything else, where do they go?
It's twitter.com/Jeff_Poore.
All right. There he is, Jeff Poore, joining us on Midday Mobile, and we're coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5. Big thank you, Jeff Poore, for joining us. Yeah, he'll be back with us Wednesday morning at 8 o'clock on Mobile Mornings. All right, a couple things I want to get to before we wrap it up for today. Feinbaum Show on the way next. You heard last hour, we replayed the interview with Mobile County District Attorney Ashley Rich. No bond. I did that this morning at 8:30. No bond for the accused cop killer. This is the story of Marco Perez, 19 years old, held without bond. He will be in a courtroom again. It'll be coming up next. Yeah, it'll be next week. He'll be back in court at that point. But for right now, in Metro. Actually, was already in Metro, and because of the holiday, the MLK holiday, they did that arraignment there at Mobile Metro. Also, additionally on this story, talked about this morning, I think we put it out on Twitter as well, the father of Perez, the senior here. You know, often we hear those stories where the parents, I can't believe this. This is not, you know, this can't be true, all these things. Well, in this case, the father of 19-year-old Marco Perez, story from IMBC 15, says 19-year-old Marco Perez was taken into custody after Mobile police officer Sean Tudor's innocent life was taken in line of duty. Perez's father spoke to NBC 15 about this tragedy and his son, saying, first of all, I want to come out and apologize for the loss of the police officer tonight. I would have never thought that my son would ever do anything like that. Went on to say, we raised him to be a better man. We don't know what happened to our son. Again, I'm deeply sorry for all the trouble he caused, not just the police officer, but also the families and for their loss. He also said Marco will reap what he has sown, and the family will not be there at upcoming court dates. So it doesn't mean much when you have the family of Sean Tudor that is dealing with his death. The wife, the in-laws, his parents. But it's affecting a lot of families here, a lot of families. And it's, so sad, so sad. 30 years old. Not that I know, I saw somebody earlier say, well, would it matter if they were older? It wouldn't. I mean, if the officer was older, it wouldn't. But it's just sad. So young, so very, very young. And second Mobile police officer slain in light of duty in 11 months, actually 11 months to the day that Justin Billett was killed. So it is a really a stark reminder of the risk that the men and women of law enforcement take every day on our behalf. And our thoughts are with the family, and we will keep you up to date with, I'm sure there'll be some things put together here to help out the family, just like there were for Justin Billett's family and his wife. And we'll give you all the information on that. Get involved. Make sure you can be there if there's some event to be at or a way to give back. We'll do that. Speaking of giving back, of course, today, Martin Luther King Day, and it's an interesting thing on this holiday, and I want to just bring it back. It doesn't have to be. There's some big projects There's the environmental projects going on. They're taking care of other human beings projects, which I think are great as well. But even if you have an individual project you're doing with your church, you're doing with a group out there, get in the habit of giving back on this Martin Luther King Day. It's something we could add to the day off, right? Because we're in this situation in this country. We get a day off, and it's go have fun. It's always go have fun. No matter, I mean, even like I said this morning, the frustration on Memorial Day. I mean, I'm not trying to bring everybody's party down, but this idea that it's, you know, that there's nothing more than a day off. And on these days, I think, you know, some of them are straight up party. Independence Day, straight up party. I get it. Thanksgiving, let's eat a whole bunch. Christmas, let's get our gifting on. Okay, those things are great. But on some other holidays, then they may have a little different meaning. Like President's Day, you know, that means you go buy sheets and comforters, right? No. But just a call to try to set up something, however small it is, a way to get back on this Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And you could do the same. You know what? You do the same on many holidays during the year, but this one should be the start of it. All right. Reminder, too, whether it's the interviews we did with District Attorney Ashley Rich, you want to hear Jeff Poor again, or maybe something we talked about in the first hour of the show, you would grab the podcast. The podcasts are available lots of places. The Clearinghouse, the place where all podcasts start. It's where we grow up the podcast and send them on their way. And that is by going to fmtalk1065.com and clicking the link for podcast. You can get them a la carte there. But better yet, I wish you'd do this. Go ahead and subscribe to get our podcast delivered to your smartphone. You can get that with your iTunes or Stitcher. You can also get it done by going to Spotify. If you're listening to your music over at Spotify, you can get it there as well. And the TuneIn Radio app, which I have messed up. I made a New Year's resolution to keep reminding you about that last year, and I've not been perfect on it, but the way to listen to the station on your smartphone, the streaming on your smartphone, it's called TuneIn Radio. TuneIn Radio. TuneIn mashed together into one word, then radio, TuneIn Radio. You can download that app from your Google Play or your iTunes store. It is really easy to use. When you open it up, just hit local radio, hit FM Talk 106.5, and we're streaming right there. Cool thing is, you get a call or you get a text, it pauses the audio so you don't miss out on anything. Usually I use this on Sunday mornings when I'm wrapped up listening to Bill Finch and Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast, and invariably there are calls on a Sunday morning. It stops it, and then I can go back and pick up the show right where I left off. That's one of the neat features with TuneIn Radio. But once again, Google Play, iTunes Store, free download called TuneIn Radio. There's like a premium version. They're pushing, a lot of people said, hey, they're pushing this other version to me. I don't have that one. I have, and I've been using this 5 years now. Yeah, 5-6 years. And I've been just fine with the regular freemium edition. If you want to, I mean, if you want to Rolls Royce it up, that's fine. Be my guest. But the regular edition works quite well. And it's called TuneIn Radio. So check that out. All right. Get ready to wrap it up here. We'll be back tomorrow morning for Mobile Mornings here at FM Talk 106.5. Coming up next, Paul Feinbaum. I wonder how much of this discussion will be about the bad call heard around the world. We'll find out. Man, I know Saints fans, y'all are ticked off beyond ticked off. And the memes online have been funny in a sad way that the Saints seemingly robbed of a possible victory by a really, really bad call. It's all on the way right here at FM Talk 106.5. See you in the morning.